Dom dom dee dom. Okay, this is the Healing Club podcast with Bob Morrissey. My guest today, once again, Grady Pruitt, great fan favorite, hugely funny comedian from Houston, Texas, who recorded a special last year, which will be released soon. So in the next 4 weeks, there will be a new Grady Pruitt comedy special distributed on something. I don't know what it's called. It's probably a apology of some sort for being such an asshole, but also trying to be good. That's Grady. I don't know what is the name of his thing. It's like, I didn't know that that'll be the name of it. Or like, hey, come on. Maybe that'd be a good name for his special as well. I don't know what the name of his special is. And I'm excited for him that he's putting out an actual special. It's a dream of mine that I haven't had realized. He's been 7 years into the stand-up comedy world of competition, and he's prevailed, and he has won funniest comic in Texas, and he has traveled around the country featuring in clubs and colleges all over the country. He's a goddamn good one, and he's the guest on this podcast today. He's a hilarious person. We don't really attempt to make funny jokes and one up each other and outdo one another with our flights of fancy and our creative exploits, and, you know, like, but he's really good at just being funny on command, but like, it's exhausting and we don't even try. If this is funny, it's only because it's an accident. But as always, Grady's a great guest on the podcast. This is the Healing Club. My name's Bob Morrissey. I hope you enjoy this one as much as I've enjoyed every podcast I've ever recorded with Grady Pruitt. He's a thoughtful, interesting, and creative, and intensely feeling and sensitive, and intuitive and brilliant comedian, and just a nice guy to hang out with. And we did this podcast, and then we did a couple shows later that night, and he's just a real joy to be around. See for yourself. This is the Healing Club podcast with Bob Morrissey. Today's guest, Grady Pruitt. Thank you.
This is Maria Bedford. You're listening to the goddamn Healing Club. Why don't you get out there and heal?
Okay. Hey, Grady.
Are we on?
Yeah, can you sit in this chair? Because yeah. I just need this microphone to... It's like... Mic system's still bad, and I don't know what to do. I spent $1,000 trying to make this...
$1,000 is still not good?
Yeah, it still sucks.
Damn.
I don't know.
Technology's a bitch.
Yeah, I'm just not good at it, and I don't know. I wanted to do a video portion of this podcast, but I gotta have the camera set up, and I gotta do a lot more editing and a little more like careful. Like, there's a difference between dead silence on the air and dead silence when you're just looking at people.
Yeah.
And I think I would be creating a lot of that. Edit this out. Let's stop. And because I don't know, I express so much through my face.
That, yeah. I have similar things of like. There's a lot of projects I have in my mind that I want to do, and one of my main things holding back is I have no ability to do video, audio, editing work. I need people to do that for me, because not only do I not know how to do it, I don't want to learn how to do it. Like, I try to edit some of my stand-up clips before, and it's taking me like 3 hours, and the end product is absolute dog shit. So, literally... I need, like, and I'm willing to pay other people to do it. But I'm like,
That's why I loved having Radu in town. Radu's great at all that shit. And he's also cool if you're cool with him. He just wants to hang out with you and then you could do it. I would love to have a collaborator kind of or know somebody who would be good at like we could do it together.
That's the thing that I was, you know, that I'm trying to get started here in Houston comedy, because there are comics and people with that skill sets that are willing to do it.
Yeah.
And everything like that.
You just got to hang out with them.
The thing is like there's a lot of talent here, and people have different talents and different skill sets. Like if you just merge them correctly,
yeah,
it can be good, because there's just certain things that I think I'm good at, and there's certain things I have like a brain fault where I'm just like, I just can't do this thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like I remember, I mean, in college, you know, you have to have have 6 credits of science.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I got A's in like all my other classes, like relatively easy. I mean, I had to work, but like it wasn't too much of a struggle. And then when it came to biology, that's where all of my effort and focus and time went into, because I just couldn't understand it.
Huh.
And I got a C.
Oh, and you just focused your full attention.
Yeah, like
to
that,
get a C. That sucks.
It's not. I don't feel bad about it.
Yeah.
It's just like I just fundamentally.
Yeah.
My brain has a hard problem understanding
people
science.
I always remember some people would be good at algebra and not good at geometry, and
right.
All the way around. Sometimes, like people who are good at geometry aren't as good at algebra. I don't know. Everybody's brain has like preferences and styles of perception and things that it like is good at noticing. That's, you know, like there's some stuff about you that's better than everybody else.
Yeah.
And then there's some stuff that's like, why the fuck can't you do what everybody else does?
Yeah.
And
that's why like intelligence is so hard to measure.
Yeah.
Because like if you were to judge me off of my ability to understand biology, like this guy's like an idiot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I'm like, well, there's other stuff I can do pretty well. You know, like,
and I pretty much left that time, you know, like there's a lot of stuff about science, biology, chemistry. I don't understand anything. And I'm not gonna pick up a book and learn about it. I'm gonna leave it to other people to to tell the world how to do research and how to, you know, speculate upon the future.
And I had some good teachers in college and professors in those subjects, but I was just like, I'm like,
yeah,
I get like sit there for 2 hours. I'm like, I don't maybe I got 10% more knowledge. I don't understand anything right now. You know, it was just so frustrating to be like, why is my brain not comprehending this information?
I was kind of that way with science in high school too.
Yeah,
I was in like advanced everything, and then in science freshman year, I don't know, the teacher was so boring, and the stuff was so dry, and it was a Catholic, like, Jesuit school, so there were some boundaries upon, like, you know, like, what he could actually talk about.
Yeah.
But although it was the 90s, but I think, like, science was allowed to speak its mind a little more freely in the 90s rather than now in public schools and universities. But like, still at a Catholic school, it's going to be like, you know, you're never going to want to enter into the God discussion or something. So, but most of the time, it's not even relevant. So when you're, I don't know.
Yeah.
What were you talented at in high school? What was good in high school? Were there any times when you?
I was really good at writing papers.
Uh huh.
That I could do really well. I could write papers, but my problem with in school with writing papers is because like you would have whatever it was 7 or 8 periods in a day, so you only got like maybe 45 minutes in a period, and it'd be like, all right, so like we have like whatever it is 2 weeks to write this paper, so you have 45 minutes. And to me, I needed way more time than that.
Uh-huh.
So I would take my papers home and like work on them and write them at home and everything, and I like, and that, because a lot of times a big thing for me was like I didn't want to use basic words, so at the time I had like a big thesaurus, so I'd like look up different words and like try to like,
I used to do that to substitute,
sometimes
I'd look in the dictionary when I was writing a paper just to get the full definition of the word, so I would like be able to say it in other words rather than the word,
yeah,
and like
And I will say, I didn't do this with every paper because some papers would be like last minute. I'm just like, I got to turn something in because I was busy doing something else, you know? But like certain papers I'd really like take my time with to like make sure they're good. But I'll never forget this because I wasn't a great student overall in high school. I became a better student in college, but in high school I was a C student. I cared more about hanging out with friends and partying and shit like that, and I would just do enough to get by. You know what I mean? But I'll never forget. But I could write papers. I remember my sophomore year, I believe, my English year, and this is one of those papers I just decided to go all out on. And the teacher brought me in, like she like held me after class and was like, "What is the second sentence in your paper?" And I was like, I knew what she was doing immediately. She was like basically saying, "You didn't write this.
You plagiarized.
You plagiarized." I think she was saying like your parents wrote this for you, which was not true. I wrote it all myself, you know. And I was like, but it was being whatever I was, 15 years old, and like kind of the overwhelming shock of being accused of something. You know what I mean? Like I you know, went into a panic. You know what I mean? And I was like, "Just tell me the first sentence. I can tell you the rest of the paper." She's like, "No. Tell me the second," and I'm like, I don't know the second. Yeah. You know what I mean? And she was like, "Yeah, that's what I thought." And then she was like, "Okay." And then I just walked out. I remember being, I was so pissed.
I was
because she's basically saying you're too dumb to write that. You know that's what she. That was the undertone. Yeah. She didn't say that out loud, but that was the undertone.
I was in a similar situation when I was a junior in high school, and at our school there was I think it was about. The AIDS crisis and how AIDS is, you know, in my math class, there was an assembly. And so there was a special day, like it was a 40-minute, you know, presentation for everybody in the school.
Yeah.
Some classes we get it at first period, second period, third period. So the math class like landed the responsibility of bringing the students to the presentation and then like writing a little 1-page paper about it, like what happened in it.
Yeah.
And for math class, you know, it's not a writing class. And then I turned in the page the next day and he accused me of plagiarizing when all I did was parrot the language that they were spewing out at me. All I did was just say exactly what I heard. And I used the same words that they did when they were talking. So he's but I was just like, you know, fuck you. I did not plagiarize. Like I was accused of something I didn't do, but he refused to believe me and he didn't punish me for it, but he acted like I was an asshole for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And I did not like plagiarize it, but I'm like, who are you to like, maybe he was just like, maybe he knew I was gay from my paper and he hated gay people and he didn't want me, and he was, he doesn't, or he was gay and he was, and there was something about the AIDS crisis in the 80s and what we, that like, he didn't want to talk about it with me, but he was like, all you did was plagiarize the pamphlet and you didn't, I'm like, I didn't, but, oh well.
I had a similar thing, but to make it a positive spin, I was taking this, I can't remember. It was a science course. It was my junior year, I believe, in high school, but this one was like an environmental science course. I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's all about like environmental sciences. And, my teacher, who was also like the basketball coach, Mr. Chaney, and again, I was known for not being a great student.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was a thing. Like you. I remember if you were, you know, to play on the sports team, you had to pass all your classes. And so if you're
under 2.0, then you couldn't be in basketball.
Yeah. And so like they would place, you know, all the whatever athletes were like failing classes, they would post it like on. Like the big board in the middle of the school, and my name, I would always have like the most classes that I'm failing, and then I would you know start trying again, and I'd pass all the classes by the end of the grading period, but it was always like halfway through the grading period, I'd be failing like 4 out of my 7 classes, you know what I mean? Something. So I was known as like a bad student, you know what I mean?
And if your name's on the board, then everybody knows.
Everyone knows or whatever. Yeah. Again, when I say like I did pretty well and got A's. I'm talking about college. I did well in college, but in high school I was bad. So, anyways, Mr. Chaney was my environmental science teacher, and again, I was not, you know, and he decided one test to essentially make it as hard as possible.
Uh-huh.
Or whatever. And I didn't know this. I just remember I was like tired because I get made fun of for like basically being dumb. You know what I mean? Like, because this is like a lot of the kids school, like they wanted to do, it was an intelligent school. You know what I mean? There's kids that were pretty smart. And so like I got made fun of for being kind of the dumb kid. I got sick. I'm not fucking dumb. I'm you know what I mean? And so I just decided for this test, I literally like, I got the textbook and I just like read it over and over and over again, like whatever the chapters were that were supposed to be tested over. And I just read it over and over and over and over again. And he intentionally made this test like ridiculously hard. I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
I just went into it going like, so literally everyone failed.
Yeah.
In the test, like everyone in all of his classes failed it. And I didn't get 100, but I got like a 92 on it or something like that. And he like brought his same thing. He brought me into the, you know, the hallway after the course, kind of being like,
did you cheat?
Yeah. Well, he was like, how did you do this? And I was like, I told him the truth. I was like, I'm tired of everyone to call me dumb. So I just had to study really hard. And he was like, good for you. You know what I mean? It was like a different, he was like, he didn't accuse me of cheating.
That's
he was
a
basically
nice
story. Like, I wanted to bring it back to a positive note because like you're right. Being accused of something you didn't do is, especially as a teacher accusing you of something you didn't do is like really infuriating, especially when they're kind of saying you're too dumb to do something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
it's a bad feeling.
And don't get me wrong, I did cheat on tests before and I got caught cheating a couple of times, but like when you're not doing that, you're actually giving an earnest effort and they think you are, it's hard to take, you know?
Mm. I just watched the Andrew Santino comedy special that came out like 6 months ago or something.
Called Cheeseburger?
Cheeseburger. Did you watch it?
I did not watch that, no.
It was interesting. It's the cheeseburger is a metaphor in his comedy special.
I figure it's a metaphor.
Because he doesn't want to be anything that remains forever, that's doing anything permanent, he's going to be buried in the ground and forgotten about just like anybody else, but you enjoy me right now like I'm a cheeseburger. But know that you're filling me with something that's you and it's not me. And then he demonstrates this point with a joke at the end about how his dog was at the hardware store, like a mom and pop hardware store that smelled like, you know, some sort of glue or whatever. And this disabled girl startled his dog and almost nipped her hand. And then the disabled girl says like, oh, your dog must hate people like me. And then the point that he's making is that everybody here thought it was a white girl. And it could have been a black girl. And I was like, but he's like, when I tell a story, you're filling in like features that
you're filling in
like
information.
100% of the people in the audience thought it was a white girl.
Yeah.
And who was the disabled girl. But the funny thing to him was like, it didn't even happen. None of it happened. I was just saying that like anybody thinks like a white person is a disabled girl. I don't know, like, and
I don't
really get the humor of like
I thought the initial thing of like the cheeseburger of being like, you know, this is only a present thing.
Yeah,
I like that thing.
I like that too. I just
that other thing,
the closer of his special was just about how
I feel bad shitting on other comics.
I'm not the metaphor. There's some stuff about him throughout the special. He did make me laugh a lot in a few parts. And but there was some stuff about it that I get a little tired of people being like, I'm politically dangerous, but I say things about both sides. And it's like you're neutralizing your danger element of, you know, like a political comic. If you're saying,
is he
like,
trying to be a political comic? I don't
for like
I don't
20
even,
minutes. Yeah, he's talking about how much
I didn't watch the special.
Trump
so
sucks.
I can't.
You're
really
saying how everybody
it.
Sucks and we're all doomed and there's no point in like pretending anymore.
Yeah.
And like I agree with that.
I'm not sure if I've ever actually seen Santino's stand up. I've more watched him on him and Bobby Lee's podcast. He makes me laugh a lot on Bobby Lee's. Or it's their podcast. I shouldn't say it's Bobby. It's the Bad Friends podcast. And I find their dynamic really fucking funny. And that makes me laugh. I actually never seen a stand-up before, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I saw him on that Beef show, so he was a character in that.
Yeah.
And,
he's a good actor. I know him off of Dave.
Oh, yeah?
He's on Dave. He's really good at that. I don't...
But I just see so much of that in comedy of people going like, you know, both sides are bad, and I'm a badass for pointing it out. I'm like, well, actually, you should have a clear opinion at this point. If you're talking about it, you should at least know what you're talking about. And like, what I don't know. I just don't think that like if you're gonna be political, you're not gonna please everybody. But some people try it anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
and that I mean. I can't speak on Andrew Santino's stand-up because I haven't seen it before. Like, I'm sorry. But, like, I can speak on my own thing of, like, how do I say this? I don't like stand-up to me that is pandering to liberals or conservatives. I find that really boring. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't find that funny if you're just saying talking points with, like, no jokes, you know? And I've pretty much steered away from political comedy in my own stand-up. Not because I don't have opinions, just because I don't feel like I know enough to talk about it. you know what I mean? Like, I almost feel like I don't. And the opinions that I do have are really, really strong. And I don't know how to make them funny. You know what I mean? I just haven't found a way to make my ideology funny.
Relatable. I think sometimes I can be a little bit like deliberately like pugnacious or something to, or like just like, you know, like I've got my fingers point, you know, I'm giving the audience the finger sometimes. I'm like, you know, I fucking hate all of you. I hate every single one of you sitting in this room, you motherfuckers. Like, I get, like, I'm like, if I'm having a bad day, I'll be like, you know what? It's because of you guys, you motherfuckers. And take it out on the audience. To me,
that's when you lose
the
funny
badge.
Of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you lose the funny of it when you actually are getting angry.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Yeah. And there's a way to channel anger into funny, but when you lose all the funny and you're just, and this is all just my opinion, then to me, the comedy is lost in it. And, like, I lost my train of thought.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think we're so, like, whatever, like, I think it's safe to say, no matter what side you're on, America and the world is in a pretty fucked up place right now. And it's not good. And to me, we are, shove that into her face on a day-to-day basis, whether it's like if you go on social media, if you read the news, if you just listen to conversations, everyone, it's like it's always like doom, doom, doom. And here's the thing, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I'm not like saying no to that, but I this is just my personal choice. When I go to do stand-up, I try to take a break from that.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And I try not to, like, be like, all when I'm doing standard, everyone, you know, people paid money and, like, trying to be entertained. I go, like, I'm not going to bring.
I got a routine and I'm, like, doing magic tricks.
Yeah.
And if your tricks work on the audience, that's what is fun.
I don't like to use them. Like, I don't like to say them as tricks because I still think what I'm doing is earnest. It's just, I view it as honest and earnest. It's just, I'm choosing not to talk about those subjects. I will talk about other subjects, or mainly I talk about my own personal life, and I'll talk about the problems that I have in my own personal life. I'll talk about the joys I have in my own personal life. I'll talk about things that I like in the world and everything. I'll talk about frustrations that I have in the world, but I try not to talk about really global social political issues because I feel like we take enough of that on a day-to-day basis. That's just how I've approached my stand-up comedy, and I don't judge anyone who approaches it differently. I just hope that when other people do choose to do that, they still maintain being funny in it.
Yeah.
And not just going like, and another thing, you know what I mean? Then it becomes, I'm like, well, this might as well just be like a blog. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know. I'm not trying to control anybody up there on stage either. I'm just trying to make the night go well, especially when I'm hosting. And yeah. I don't want to say something that's going to blow your mind and like make you vote like in another way. Yeah. And like, you know, I am interested in what fills the audience's minds when they all look at something at the same time. And why does a whole room full of people like turn to look at something happening if a famous person walks in? Or why do all people behave in like a herd like manner when they're in a huge crowd? Yeah. And what is the thing that will capture everyone's attention and make everybody feel like they're sharing the same mind? And that's what I love nights when everybody's filled with the same like feeling, or when everybody reacts all at once and it just becomes like,
yeah. I've seen you do that on stage before. I've seen like whole audiences be like really on board with,
yeah,
and laughing at for the same reason, in my opinion, I think the same reasons that you're intending them to laugh at, you know.
Yeah,
it's hard to capture that.
That's what I'm always going. So sometimes I think like, I don't know. I get moody and angry and fucking like I feel like powerless and paranoid, and I get like, you know, like misdirected anger toward like people who are just like trying to do what I'm doing and love comedy for the same reasons that I do, but I'm like, oh no, you're like, I attribute like myself, like I think that I must be so important to so many people, but I'm not in the ways that I wish I were, but I probably am in ways that I don't know I am like important.
How do you
to
wish
people.
You were
I wish I were like, oh my God, that's the best person in Houston. Oh my God, that's the one you have to see. Oh my God, I could like, oh, if you come to Houston, go to his show, and that's going to be like, you know, a defining thing in your life. Is like, you'll never see another comedian like him. I'm like, hey, he probably will. I'm like, yeah, well, what I'm doing isn't that special. It's pretty good sometimes, and it works, but it's not selling out arenas for a reason, and. Like,
yeah, but I find like the people that I talk to that are really funny, that know you, all find you really funny as well.
Yeah,
including myself and a bunch of the funny people in Houston all go, yeah, Bob's hilarious. And we also recognize the style of comedy that you're choosing to do. I go like, that's not gonna work all the time in front of a lot of audiences. Like, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But and that's your choice to make. I'm telling you to change it, or I mean, it's your choice of what you want to do. I find it hilarious and it is funny. It's very funny because you're funny and it goes. But I go like, will this find its audience on a larger scale? Or will it not? I don't know. You know what I mean?
I hope
like,
so.
I hope so too. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because it's original and it's funny. And it's like, but I see audiences being kind of taken aback by going like, what the fuck is he doing? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, when you have that joke, I don't want to butcher your own joke in front of you, talking about like, you have a couple ones that just make me laugh so hard about like, something about like, if you get superpowers, you have to do something horrible. I don't know exactly. You don't have to repeat the joke.
I'll do the joke. Okay. It was, what if being racist gave you superpowers? Would you do it? What if jacking off kids gave you superpowers? Would you do that? I wouldn't, because I wouldn't want to be flying around in the air, and everybody knows why. Up there.
There's that one. That one makes me laugh. And then the one about you, in the army, and then you and your friend would like dress up and everything, like,
oh,
you know what I'm talking
about?
Yeah,
where we were like shoving tampons up our asses and like army shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
that's
like,
one of the best punchlines of all time. like, army shit. Yeah. You know, doing army shit. Yeah, like, so you have jokes that are like, I mean, no one has jokes like that. That's so funny. And I also see them die in front of audiences, and I almost want to like shake the audience. I'm like, that's the funniest thing anyone said all night.
Ah, well.
But
I wrote something stupid down because I'd smoked weed, and I was like, oh yeah, this is funny. And it was right before you came over, but are comedians on the front lines? Are comedians on the front lines, Grady?
is that something someone's saying? People saying that shit?
Yeah, we're like the observers who distract and maintain peace in the terror of modern times.
Oh, comedy is so self-important. It's funny. I almost said something exactly like that earlier in the podcast. And I'm almost like, ashamed of myself now.
But I was there in 95 when Jimmy Pineapple was, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
There's nothing funnier than the name Jimmy Pineapple.
I know, yeah.
It's like, such a funny name, like, Jimmy Pineapple. To be like the outlaw Jimmy Pineapple.
Yeah.
But Andy Huggins is another classic like comedian. It's like, Andy Huggins always just made people happy. He didn't do anything that was like so dangerous people were trying to stop him. It's like he was always just being funny.
He just went up there and, became very funny. Yeah. I don't know. I look at stand-up comedy almost like anything else. Like, you're just providing a service. You know what I mean? Like, you're just providing a service for people, you know? And don't get me wrong. I have so many complexes. I feel like I contradict myself every other sentence when I started talking about comedy. Because also, like, stand-up comedy has, you know, like, there's been stand-up comedy that literally changed my mind on my outlook on life. So it's like, you know, I guess that is a service, you know what I mean? I don't know. I mean I love it, so I just continue to do it and pursue it. And also, like, what's it called, you know, watch it and be a part of it. Like, I still enjoy watching stand-up comedy, you know, especially when it's done really well, you know? So, I don't know. When people... Front lines, when you compare it to actual war, is always a little bit like, yeah. All right, I mean, no one's losing
limbs.
I've been
on the front lines of gay comedy.
Yeah.
For 11 years now.
Yeah.
I've been out there talking about my anus, like, on stage, my dick, and getting plowed and being nailed and, you know, laying in the urinal at the Ripcord waiting for people to pee on me and just, you know, gulping it down and being gross for people in Houston for 11 fucking years, man. At the, I don't know, just doing gross shit out loud. And I don't know, like, it's a service, you know, it's kind of a service.
I mean, to a degree, it is, you know.
And you know what I was thinking about was my neighbor next door, like, walked in and he told me that he saved $200 on a parking ticket by going to the judge and appealing the case. And he just had to pay a $50 parking ticket instead of a $250 parking ticket and all that. And while he was telling me this story, he just seemed so much like a younger, gayer Andy Huggins. and then I was remembering, he must be about like 55 now, the next door neighbor. And I was remembering you were over here like 4 years ago. And he was probably in the last gasps of flaming gay, promiscuous sexual joy for I don't think he's fucking as much now, but he did have a guy come over earlier today, so whatever. I don't know. Yeah. Like, he gets around like a gay 55-year-old Andy Huggins would.
Yeah.
Apparently he makes people really happy. There was one day when he had like four people over on a Thursday at 3 p.m.
Jesus Christ.
And you were here. You
remember? I
remember
this. I remember this. Because it was like loud. And I was like, what the fuck is going on over there?
I'll find underwear outside of his door sometimes.
Yeah.
And like,
Like, oh yeah, no, there's a gator, and just people come by, and like, there's like blindfolds involved.
Yeah,
and he
fucks.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, it's my neighbor.
Like, strangers come in and like fuck him and shit. I was like, holy fuck. You know, it's just so foreign to me. Like as a straight dude, I'm like, what the hell?
Group sex? What the fuck? Yeah, he come in an efficiency apartment.
Yeah,
like he's not even rich.
Yeah,
it's like, but he's still getting like young dudes to come over and fucking fill his hole with the
because dudes are disgusting. And with gay dudes, there's really no woman to say no. Yeah, sure, go ahead. You know, and I don't know. I've only been invited to like one of those group sex things once. Some lady asked me to go to it, and at first I said yes. Like, oh yeah, that'd be really fun. And then I got really like prudent out, and weird. I was like, I don't want to be like fucking around a whole bunch of other people. Like I immediately felt like kind of like and I bailed out. I didn't even end up going to it. And I felt just. I was like, what if I see someone I know there? I just felt so.
I went to the bathhouse next to Scotty's apartment about 5 years ago. The one that.
I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. It was. I just paid $20 and put my clothes in a locker, walked in naked, and everybody else was black. And and it was like I sucked one guy's dick for like 2 minutes, and then I was like, "Well, I got my money's worth."
Yeah.
And then I just left, I'd heard later from reports from others who'd visited that you only had to pay the $20 if you weren't cute.
Oh no! And I was like, oh, that's heartbreaking. Holy shit!
I was like, okay, well, at least, but it was one of those things that I guess I'm glad I did once in my life. You know, went to a bathhouse. It's like when you fill out those surveys of how pure are you, Rice University incoming freshman. They all get these 100 question.
Oh yeah, I took that
surveys.
Test. Yeah, I like, took that test.
I want to be the dirtiest person that they've ever interviewed. You know, I want to like get 100% slut.
I had like 20 things that I didn't check.
Yeah.
Like I think so, like 80 of the things I had done before. And some of the ones you're like, yeah, I don't know if I need to do bestiality. You know what I mean? Like, so like some of them get like so extreme where you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Know, like
we were just talking on the podcast I did yesterday with Mackenzie Jewell about a guy.
I like Mackenzie a lot.
We were talking about a guy who got fucked to death by a horse. And I was like,
yeah. Oh yeah. That's a famous video.
It's like, well, gong gong. So, yep, sucks to be him. All right, yep. I mean, he did it to himself. I mean, like, he did get fucked by a horse. I'm sorry you died, but, you know, cool it. On the, you know, you don't have to do everything.
You just take it to a certain extreme. Talking about bathhouse, man, I fucking went to a spa for the first time a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Fucking Will Lowton, Ben Daniel, and myself went to, like, a spa in Katy called Spa World. It might be like one of my top five favorite experiences I think I've ever had in my entire
life. Just got massages or something?
No,
or
there was no
nails
massages.
Done or
no.
You got like,
have you ever been to a spa before?
Mani Pedi spa?
No. What the fuck?
No. Like a massage parlor.
No, you can get a massage there, but it was like it was too much extra money. We didn't get, none of us got
just
massages.
Sit around in a hot tub? Or
no,
what?
So like, I'll explain the experience. You go into this facility. And the same thing, you put your shoes up in a locker, and then you go into like his locker room, and then you have a locker room where you can put all your clothes and everything like that, you know, belongings. Put your locker in that, and then there's like you go in this area where there's three hot tubs to different varying degrees of hot. You know what I mean? So you go in that's like hot, you go in that's like hot, and then you go in that's like fucking scorching hot.
Uh huh.
And then there's a cold tub that's like really fucking cold.
Uh-huh.
And then there's one pool with like neutral water, and then there's also a dry sauna and a wet sauna, and so you can stay there as long as you want, you know what I mean, hop in the different pools, da, 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 da. Like there's no time limit, there's not like you got 1 hour. It's also $30.
Uh-huh.
It's only 30
unlimited
bucks.
Pools for $30,
and then
brought
so you,
to you by Spa World.
So then you do that, and then you can like go back. They have like a uniform there. Also, that they have like little like disposable toothbrushes and toothpaste, and then like, you know, shave. You want to shave and everything like that. Get all clean, and then you go upstairs. There's all these different rooms you can go into. Like one of them's like you sit. It's like a, it's hot, but not like scorching hot. I'd say it's more warm, between warm and hot. And then you kind of you lay down all these like almost like marbles or whatever. You just like lay down on these marbles. And there's like an infrared room. There's like this penguin room. There's all these different like kind of rooms that you can go into. And then they have an area where you can just lounge around, sit. They have like a napping, like these cubbies where you can just go take a nap in. You know what I mean? And then they have they have really good food there. You can order some food, and they have like a patio area where you just go sit on the patio. They had like $2 beers. We're gonna have a couple beers. It was like, I think we ended up staying for like 6 hours, and we do all that.
So that was like $180.
No, it's $30.
Oh, okay, but it's not $30 an hour.
It's $30 for your entire time.
Oh,
and you can stay as long as you want.
All right,
you like literally for 6 hours, it was $30 each.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then, you know, then we went through all the rooms, da-da-da, and then we went back down to, like, the pools. You know what I mean? And went into the hot tubs and the cold tubs again, went to the spa. So, like, you could just keep on rotating. You go to whatever you want, stay there for as long as you want. And it was, like, I felt so refreshed and relaxed after. And I remember just, like, I remember going for a walk after. I've never felt anything like this. Like, I was sweating because it's hot outside. And I swear, I was sweating like pure water, like all the quote unquote toxin. Like there was like no like,
yeah.
You know, your sweat has like a certain, you know what I mean? Kind of
like taste to it.
Yeah. Like a coloring, yeah, or a taste. I'm like sweating like water right now. It was like, honestly, one of the
it's
most
like
pleasurable
bathing in the pools of Zeus.
Yeah.
and feeling reinvigorated and refreshed and regenerated.
It was
and
so good. And
pure and new.
Exactly. Yeah. Like my lower back pain was gone. I remember just being like, oh, shit. It was something where I'm like, everyone should be doing this.
Maybe
at
I
least
should take Andy out to that.
No, I recommend it.
They say don't have diarrhea before you go in the pool, though. That's I got to watch it for a day when I don't have diarrhea.
Yeah,
and just go when I'm clean.
That is a rule that they have. That like they have signage posted everywhere. don't diarrhea.
Please don't come
pool
with your diarrhea and muddy our pool with your diarrhea.
Yeah. that's a big thing there. No, honestly, the two of y'all would be $60, and y'all can spend an entire day there.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you buy drinks and food, you know, it's gonna be more. But like.
Yeah, I don't like going out somewhere and getting wasted. If I'm going to drink, I want to be close to home.
So yeah,
at least
you don't
have the option of walking.
But you can get lunch there. The food there is good. We you know, it's a Korean spot, so you know, we got like some dumplings and some other stuff or whatever, but it was all really good, you know.
I've been trying to maintain a better attitude in life about like my place in the universe and, you know, what I'm doing here and feeling loved and like, you know, cause you take for granted, the good things that are in your life. If you're trying to get things that are what you consider better, which you may not even want once you have them, and like, just not be so stressed out and angry all the time, which is, I got some anger, but my anger clouds my judgment and I do dumb things sometimes.
Yeah.
And I let people get to me, and I feel manipulated a lot because I am, especially working at the strip club. That's where you get manipulated. That's the whole place.
The ultimate manipulation.
It's like,
is
yeah,
the strip
like,
club.
And
yeah.
Well, but like, my ability to just maintain control and to feel like you know, like,
isn't this what this is? This podcast?
Yeah. But like, I get that, like, you know when I. Cop car pulls you over or something. Oof. Feeling,
yeah,
I feel kind of like that feeling, that level of like, things are gonna fuck up like at any moment,
right,
all the time. I'm like, I've got like that, like, oh shit, there's something like something's about to fuck all of my plans up. But things have gone so bad for me like financially before that now I should just be relishing the little bit of money I have saved in the bank to be like, I can handle anything. If I need to work another job, move somewhere, like actually, you know, like I've got like, I don't have to do anything I don't want to do because I have a little bit of money right now. And it feels nice.
Yeah.
Like,
and I think both of us have experienced like having like $0.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Oh. And in this weird way, when you have $0 to your name and like, you know, I've had to like shoplift for food and stuff like that, where you gotta, it's almost like a superpower. You're like, well, if I can survive like this, well, there's almost like nothing that you can do to me that like is really like
gonna scare me.
And don't get me wrong, I don't want to live like that. It's not like I like seek that out. You know what I mean? But I go, well, if I can do this, well, then there's really like, what the fuck can you take away from me? You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know.
Yeah. And my brother, Patrick, reminds me so much of Scottie Peterson. It's so.
Really?
Yeah. And he just has the same way of telling stories sometimes and talking about the biggest failures of his life, like in a list form that makes it sound sort of like one of Scotty's stories.
Yeah.
You know, like my brother and Scotty would be pals if they had known each other. But Jesus, he's having a hard time right now.
Really?
He had a heart attack and had to stop driving a truck that he'd been driving for 5 years. But the woman he loved most in the world like froze to death in a Target parking lot when she was drunk and passed out after in Chicago.
Oh my god.
And so then he just spent 5 years driving a truck.
Holy shit. Oh my god.
Yeah, he's got a real bad alcohol problem, that brother of mine.
Yeah.
And he's a little bit like but he's getting to be he's 55 now, which is a old age for now. Like it's after a heart attack.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be old age, but I guess I don't see myself going to 70, 80, 90 years old. And
you don't?
I kind of hope not, you know? Like I kind of just see how bad things are going to be by the time I'm 90.
Well, not I don't know. I have different thoughts about that. Like, because at a certain point, either your mental health is going to go away or your physical health is going to go away. And I don't know which one is worse.
Oh, physical health going away. But, oh yeah, mental health. If everybody thought you were some kind of a shooter every time you went places and you pissed people off because you were, like, crazed with delusional, you know, I think everybody, even crazy people, think that they're doing the right thing all the time, or they're only doing what they have to do, or like it's like they out of pride or out of dignity or an idea of dignity that's crazy, or you know, like.
Do you think that some people, though, when they're like really out of their mind, whether it's a disease or on drugs, I feel like some people I still look at go like, even if you were like of mind, you'd still be an asshole. I look at some people like that. But I'm like, even if you were of a mind, I'm like, you would still be like not that great of a person. I don't know. And maybe it's just.
It's like.
I could be wrong in that judgment, but there's just certain people that I go like, I know you're.
I kind of know who you're talking about, too. So I'm like, I'm a little bit like, okay, right. I don't know. Even I don't want to say.
Yeah,
I would never say who I think is an asshole. But there's a couple people, of course. But like Albert DeLeon and I were talking, I generally think everybody who gets on stage and is trying to be funny like is doing great. You know, that's a great thing to be doing with your life. And it's you should be proud, you know, for doing comedy for people. It's a, even if it doesn't work out, it's a noble gesture. It's even if you don't get everything you want, you really did do. It's better to regret something that you have done than to regret things that you never even tried to do.
That's true.
And my
I agree with that. It, man, it's so funny. I agree with that, and I also, I feel like I could argue against it as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because like, there's certain people you go like, when someone is a absolutely like delusional idiot who's like hateful and just like unfunny and continues to go up over and over and over and over again, it's like, are they dedicating themselves to like a noble cause, or should they like, how about you get the fuck off the stick? You know what I mean? Like, how about you stop? You know what I mean? Like, because there are certain people I go like, you need to stop.
Yeah.
Because not only are you not good at this, you are impeding the growth. With
and you're
people
making
that have,
other people bad at this.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's
oh,
like you're literally like, impeding the growth of people that have actual potential.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't know. I
never want to be that person in anybody else's eyes, though. And I bet there are people who look at me like, God damn it. Shut the fuck up. I'm so tired of your bullshit. Oh, my God. I hear it. Like, all right, you know, the world's not fair. Oh, Bob doesn't get what he wants. Fuck you. Yeah, like, I bet people look at me that way. Yeah.
Those are the certain people. But, yeah. I mean,
get off the stage. Yeah, I bet that's, like, that's some people's feelings about me, I bet. But, you know, I don't want to force anybody to stop pursuing their dreams if they're talented.
That's true. Someone's actually talented, I can do is fucking encourage them, even when they're going through a tough time. Like you, Bob.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
It's like going through a fine time. I'm loved. I'm running shows. I was on TV a couple weeks ago. I was on. Nice. That's something I can knock off on my on a
You've
different
on
survey
television.
Of stuff that, you know, I,
yeah.
Like, you know, I've been on TV, gone skydiving, I was in a war, been to France, I made love to a man, and I've been in an orgy, and I've
it's a whole life.
Yeah.
It's a life.
I tried to write a book. It didn't get published. Maybe it will someday. Maybe I will publish. But I did publish a story once in a German book that was translated into German. And you know, but it was a porno magazine, basically.
It's somewhere. You know. I worry. About, not worry. Worry's not the right word, but I just think about it, I go like, you know, like I have projects that I'm working on, you know, like I have an album come out very soon that I'm like, well, it's like legitimately like at this point over 7 years worth of work. Like if you consider like all the, times of going up on stage and then just did it. I'm like, wow, this is like my best 50 minutes of material that I have right now. And then like, you know, getting a record label to sign me and then, you know, doing all the editing work and da 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 and getting the album cover. And this is like a lot of work. And I go like, there's a possibility 30 people listen to this. like there's such a possibility. But I go like, was it worth it to do that? My answer is like, yes.
Life goal realized.
Yeah.
Yes. I did it.
I've really learned not to like worry about the results and go like, well, I'm proud of it and I think it's good. And then I don't want to say them out loud because they're not done yet or they're not, I can't say that they're coming out yet, but there's a lot of other projects that I'm working on and hopefully will come out. And I go, they might not ever get a lot of views or a lot of listens or a lot of acclaim, but I go like, yeah, but I'm still proud. I'm glad I did it. What am I supposed to do? Not continue to do, you know what I mean? Like, and I do know that like the people, in my opinion, I think the people that do listen to it will probably enjoy them or see it. Well, I'll probably be like, this is good. You know what I mean?
And you'll have a reason to hope that, like, the next one you do will have a bigger audience.
Yeah.
Even if it's not, like, you know, everything you wish you could accomplish immediately, like beyond Saturday Night Live. It made me so happy to see Andrew Dismukes and Devin Walker make it out of Austin and on the Saturday Night Live, literally.
Yeah.
People I knew 7 or 8 years ago are like, you know, doing stuff that I wish I could be doing, but like, good for them, because I wouldn't want to be there doing what they're doing every week. You know, I wouldn't have the fucking like being on Saturday Night Live would drive me crazy.
I think I'd rather host that show the next year. Oh, yeah. On it. You know what I mean? Like, that, to be on that show, I mean, I know a few people that were on it, and it just seems like, it takes over your whole life.
Of course it does. You know what I mean? Yeah, but it's a rite of passage that, like, if you get there, then, like,
it's a ginormous stamp of approval.
Yeah.
Is ginormous even a word? I don't even know. It's a gigantic stamp of approval of, like, yeah, you did it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, even for Shane Gillis, just to be, you know, not even on it for one day, but, like, you know,
yeah, he
named as one of the new cast members and then have it taken away six hours later.
Now he's one of the biggest comedy stars in the world. He's a bigger comedy star than anyone on SNL right now.
Yeah.
He's a bigger star than any of them. Like,
Bowen Yang is great, and I love their cast right now. I think
it's
a really strong cast
right now. Everyone shits on SNL no matter what. It's been going on since, I would say, 1980, since the original cast left. Everyone just shits on the new cast. Literally, since 1980, everyone just shits on the current cast no matter what.
Well, since 1985, I remember they had some horrible seasons, like when Gilbert Gottfried did his 1 year.
Yeah.
In like 1980.
I'm not saying those weren't bad seasons. I'm not saying those weren't bad seasons. I'm saying everyone shit on them, sometimes deservingly so and sometimes not. But what I'm saying is, like, right now, the current SNL cast is getting shit on, like, a lot. But I'm like, I think they're I think it's a very talented cast. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's good. I think the writers on it are really strong. I think this is, like, a strong era of SNL. And, like,
it has been for a while.
Yeah. And they just had a massive exodus of, like, who all, like
Beck Bennett and stuff.
Yeah, like, Beck Bennett. Ago, like, and then Kate McKinnon and A.D. Bryant and Pete Davidson, a bunch of those people left. And people kind of like, oh, well, this is going to be Melissa Villasenor, Mikey Day, a bunch of these people all left.
Chris Redd.
Chris Redd.
Chris Redd he was my favorite on the show for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I want to see him do more shit.
I always kind of like the weird, like, I love Kyle Mooney.
Yeah.
Andrew Dismukes is honestly one of my favorite cast members right now. I really like what he does on there. And then the new kid,
Austin Johnson's real funny. And
yeah, he's good.
Sarah Sherman is
Really fucking funny. Cecily Strong is kind of like I imagine she's leaving.
She already left.
Oh, she did leave? Yeah, she's really strong. And then he's his first year, Michael Longfellow. I really like, he has like Norm MacDonald vibes to him. I really like that guy a lot. But anyways, we're just bragging on SNL. But yeah, I think it's a strong cast.
I miss it. I can't wait for the writer's strike to be over. I'm actually I think it sucks, like, having like all this, everything suspended and everything stopped. And
well, it sucks because it's like, you're like, it to me, it's so simple. I'm like, how
can't you just pay people like you care about them?
Yes.
Can't you just like...
These fucking corporations. I'm like, why can't y'all fucking just pay the actual workers a decent amount of money? It's fucking ridiculous to me.
And if fucking actors, famous actors and writers and stuff can't negotiate a good life, what hope is there for anybody lower than them?
Yeah.
That's the thing that actually makes me go, like, this is sort of important.
Like, there's people... I read some story... It was a guy, I believe he's a writer for The Bear. You know what I mean? That's that new show on FX. I think about like the kitchen line cooks and everything like that.
Yeah.
Or whatever. That's literally like winning all the awards. And there's like a writer that like to go to the Emmys or something like that, literally had to like borrow money to get a tie. You know what I mean? And you're just like, you're like, wait. So this guy's on like a, a hit award-winning show.
And you're expecting him to fucking live in a shithole basement with his mom.
And then what makes me mad is, like, I see sometimes on Twitter, especially, like, you know, I grew up in, like, a Republican area, and people, like, shit on the strike, like, so these Hollywood elitists want more money. I'm like, these aren't, like... Like think about, like, our buddy Zod Deji. Like, is he a Hollywood elitist?
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
He's always been on the, like, brink of, like, being the guy laying on the street.
Yeah, I'm like, he's lived with his parents for, like, 7 years.
He,
like,
no, he had his parents. He was paying for his parents.
I know. Like, yeah. I know. He
paid off all his student loans, too.
Yeah.
He had, like, $100,000 in debt.
Yeah.
That dude's impressive.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, these are people, like, grinding their fucking ass off to get a single opportunity. They're like, Hollywood elitists. You're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
like, this is someone that worked their ass off to get any sort of level of success. And then they're not being paid properly for it because these head honchos of the corporate elite.
They just want to replace people with AI chat devices.
It's unbelievable.
And
and then I see it, I mean, it's in every single fucking industry right now. Like, right now, like, I was watching this whole documentary about, like, UFC fighters and just the, like, you know, like, you know, the UFC now is, like, worth, like, $10 billion, and then just the amount of money that they're paying, like, fighters is so low. It's the most dangerous sport.
Oh, you get the most head injuries, getting kicked in the face.
It's the biggest risk in the world or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, people who are literally at the top, like, there's this guy named Jared Cannonier, who's, like, he fought for the world title against Israel Adesanya not too long. He's, like, he's one of the best in the entire world. And, like, after his fight, they're like, do you think you're going to take some time off? Or are you trying to go to fight? He's like, I need to fight as soon as possible because I'm broke. And, like, they asked him, he's in an interview, they're like, what do you mean you're broke? Like, you just got paid this amount of money. He's like, yeah, man, that sounds good. But he's like, this amount goes to my gym. This amount goes to my coaches. This amount goes to medical fees. This amount goes to taxes. I have, you know, two kids. This amount goes to that. He goes, like, when it's done with everything, he's like,
yeah,
I have no fucking money left. You know what I mean? He's like, I have to. And you're like, holy shit, man, this is fucking brutal. He's one of the best in the world. You know what I mean? And by the time he's done with the fight, he's still fucking broke. And by the way, when they're done, there's no pension. There's no anything, and they have, like, traumatic brain injuries, and you're just like, and you just want to shake, you know, essentially Dana White and the UFC, like, yo, y'all are worth billions of dollars.
Yeah, at least, like, pay for their fucking hospital bills.
Yeah,
they're bringing in all this money, and they're leaving people to be destitute after they're done.
Yeah, legitimate, like, these guys should be, like, the amount of pay-per-view money that these people are making, I'm like, they should be getting paid millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And when they retire, they should never.
Nobody else is bringing in all that money.
Yeah.
They're like the prize golden goose.
Yeah.
It's like.
And they're top athletes in the world. Like, in the same way NBA players, they get paid tens of millions of dollars. This is the same way these dudes should be paying as well. And some of them make $40,000 a year. You know what I mean? And you're like, dude, this is fucking. And they're literally putting their well-being on the line.
All of the endowments for a lot of the schools and universities and stuff all around the country, most of the money goes to the sports industry. And those coaches, you know, are given, you know, they're not, like, kids, like athletes go to colleges and then sometimes, like, don't even get to study anything substantial, and their studies are put second to their, you know, athletic career, and then
make it to the league.
Most of it goes nowhere, and then they're just left there with, like, you know, a shitty degree and a bunch of debt, and, like, you know, like, the experience of, like, making, like, crowds full of, like, 100,000 person stadiums, like know their name, I think it sucks that college players don't get any money at all for what they're doing.
They are now. The rules have changed in the last couple of years. And I think they're allowed to take sponsorships now or something like that. They used to not even allowed to take sponsorships. I think now that's what it is. They're allowed to take sponsorships and stuff like that. So,
I got to make dinner.
Okay.
This has been a fun podcast. Issues. I forgot, you know, I like when I forget what's happening.
Yeah.
And it just happens and it's over.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk to you, Bob.
All right. Thanks, Grady.
All right.